This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, the best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Now on the air and online worldwide at paytaxeslater.com. Get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm David Baer here in the KQV studios with Jim Lang, CPA, attorney, and author of two best-selling books, Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. If you are planning for your retirement, you should know that significant and long-term financial gains can be achieved by maximizing your Social Security benefits in conjunction with a Roth IRA conversion. For insights on the strategy, we welcome Mary Beth Franklin to today's Lang Money Hour. A nationally recognized financial writer who focuses on retirement issues, Mary Beth is a contributing editor at Investment News and author of the Retirement 2.0 blog. A longtime senior editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine, Mary Beth's weekly personal finance column also appeared in more than 200 newspapers nationwide. She's been a guest on NBC's Today Show and Meet the Press, the CBS Early Show, CNN, and numerous other television and radio programs. So stay tuned for an interesting and informative hour. And listeners, since our show is live, you can join the conversation by calling the KQV studios at 412-333-9385. That's 333-9385. And without further ado, I'll say hello, Jim, and welcome, Mary Beth.
Welcome, Mary Beth.
Thank you. I really appreciate you the invitation to be here tonight.
It is literally my honor. I've always considered you one of the most knowledgeable financial writers in the country, and I mean that sincerely. And I'll put you up there with Jonathan Clemens and Jane Bryan Quinn, and you know we've done a lot of work together, mainly when you were at Kiplinger's, and I always knew that when you were involved in a column that it was going to come out right and it was going to come with perspective. So it's really an honor to have you.
Well, thank you.
Here.
I'm flattered, and I really take great pride in my work, and I love spreading the word to consumers about you can take control of your retirement, but it does take planning.
Well, and the other thing that was so perfect for having you as a guest, one of the areas that I have been involved with lately in my own, let's say, research is combining techniques for both Social Security and when to take Social Security and Roth IRA conversions. And I know that you have deep knowledge of both Social Security and Roth IRA conversions, so I thought who could be a better guest than to explain some of the concepts than you. So
well, I think we're going to have a great conversation.
I think so. And for people who are interested, and I think that should be practically all our listeners, in reading more about your information and just getting more of you, and then you just made a very generous offer, which was to answer people's questions, that people should know that they could go to www.investmentnews.com, which has your column and apparently a place to ask questions. Is that right?
Right, and you can also email me directly at mbfranklin. That's my first two initials, last name. mbfranklin@investmentnews.com. I try to answer everybody's email, but frankly, I get about 300 a week, so sometimes I don't get to all of them. But my goal is to really make Americans aware of this incredibly valuable benefit and to think, I think people should make their decision about when and how to claim Social Security benefits just as if it's any other investment decision. It's that important.
Well, I agree with you completely. In fact, I'm kind of amazed at how badly people choose or the what they have done really is not in their best financial interest. So why don't we start with the meat of the show by talking about some general concepts of Social Security, then maybe get into apply and suspend. But so let's say that we have some listeners and they are, I don't want to say short-sighted, but I'll just say not educated in this area. And they're thinking, you know, I've been working, I've been paying into Social Security. Now that I'm 62 years old, and I'm retired. I'm just going to take my benefit right now. And yeah, I know that I can wait a little longer and get a little bit more, but I don't know if the government's going to be there or not. I just want to take my Social Security. How would you respond to somebody who has that type of mentality but might be a little bit open-minded if you could give them some convincing information about why that might not be the best scenario?
Well, frankly, I hear that all the time. And let me give you a little background of why I got into writing about Social Security. I know you're broadcasting from Pennsylvania. I'm from Pennsylvania myself.
All right, where from?
From the Philadelphia area.
Oh, that's too bad, but go ahead.
And I have one of five children. No, it's a great place to be.
I'm just kidding. That's that Pittsburgh-Pennsylvania rivalry.
It's always a rivalry. And in fact, my editor at Kiplinger's Magazine was a stalwart person from Pittsburgh, so we always had that rivalry. But I was one of five children, and my siblings are much older than I am, and I would watch one after another claim their Social Security benefits at 62, keep working, and then complain that they were giving benefits back to the government because they were collecting benefits early and still working. And I thought, well, that's really stupid. So I decided to research the rules of Social Security. And when I wrote my first story for Kiplinger's Magazine on this subject in 2008, let me tell you, the story was called Secrets of Social Security's Four Ways to Maximize Your Benefits. The floodgates opened. I received so many letters, emails, and phone calls, and this is not an exaggeration. I set aside the first hour of every workday for a year to respond to the questions.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, the American public has this insatiable appetite for information about Social Security benefits, and nobody's giving it to them. So I decided I was going to be the person to help educate Americans about Social Security. Now, mind you, I said that was 2008. Something else happened in 2008. Our stock market went crazy, and our economy followed. And everything we thought we knew about retirement planning changed. Because in the old days, 75% of more people claimed benefits, Social Security benefits at 62 because they could. And because many of them retired at that point, and many of them had pensions. And now we're in a world where it's very hard to find a traditional pension. Interest rates are next to nothing, and many people are saying they're going to work longer because they have to build up their savings. Those three things together have changed the reason why people need to think differently about Social Security.
Okay, well, that's a good start. And let's add the marital piece later, but let's just assume for discussion's sake that you have somebody who is retired at age 62, and they have the choice of collecting Social Security now or consider waiting until either 66 or even 70. What should they be thinking about, and how do the numbers work for those kinds of decisions?
Right. Let's start with the basics. The current normal retirement age right now for someone to receive full benefits is 66 years old. It used to be 65. You can still get benefits as early as 62, but if you do, they will be permanently reduced. You will get 75% of your benefits at 62 compared to 100% at 66, and that reduction lasts the rest of your life. Now, there is an option to delay benefits up until age 70. This is something that very few people did in the past, but more and more people are looking at the value of this. Because for each year you postpone benefits after your normal retirement age of 66 up to age 70, you earn an additional 8% per year up until age 70. So that means if you waited until age 70 to collect your benefits, they would be worth 132% of your full retirement age benefit. Now compare that to taking a reduced benefit at 62. It's almost double the amount.
Right. So you're talking one way is, let's say, whatever your benefit is, $25,000 a year, whatever it is, at 66, if you take it early, you're getting 75% of that money. And if you wait until 70, you're getting 132% of that money. And plus, it's not only just that exact amount, but you're also going to get the cost of living adjustments.
Right. When you delay getting benefits, when you do finally collect them, all the intervening cost of living adjustments for the years you didn't collect are applied to that bigger benefit, And more importantly, going forward, each year, Social Security beneficiaries receive a cost of living adjustment, and the larger your base benefit is, the bigger the dollar amount of that cost of living adjustment is going to be. I think we used to think in the past of Social Security simply as monthly income. And as people are realizing, so many baby boomers particularly are likely to live so much longer, they need to think of Social Security as longevity insurance, money that will last the rest of your life, no longer how long you live, and to be cost of living adjusted. Even people who are lucky enough to have traditional pensions from private industry usually do not have a cost of living adjustment. So this is an incredibly valuable benefit.
Well, it's interesting that you said that, because I have heard the analogy, and believe me, I'm not pushing insurance right now, but I have heard the analogy that there is an effect longevity insurance product. So let's say it's age 65, you plunk down $100,000, you don't get anything until you're age 85, and then at age 85, you get $100,000 a year for the rest of your life. If you die before age 85, your heirs get nothing.
Right. I like to think of it as the ultimate roulette wheel of insurance.
Yeah, really.
But actually...
you bet your life.
You bet your life or not. One of the major insurance companies in the last couple of years has actually come out with a modified version of that longevity insurance. It's essentially a deferred fixed annuity where you put up a certain amount of money, you know, in your 50s or even 60s, and collect at a later date. Now, in their product, you wouldn't have to wait until age 85. You could select your date. It might be 10 years from now or 12 years from now. But it's brilliant in that the biggest question financial planners and consumers can't answer when they plan for retirement is, how long am I going to live? But if you had a product that you knew kicked in at a certain point, when you're 80 years old or 85 years old, you could say, well, the rest of my money only has to last till then. It actually makes retirement planning a lot more certain.
Well, I actually love that idea, but the point that I was going to bring up, no matter how wonderful that product is conceptually, and I do like it, from everything that I understand, the deal, if you will, because that's what holding off on Social Security is a little bit conceptually, but it is a much better rate than any private insurance company would give you.
Oh, absolutely. Social Security is the cheapest annuity you could buy. But the flip side of that, and people do worry, what happens if I plan to delay and I die sooner? Well, frankly, you must be present to win. So if you think you have health issues or longevity is not a family trait, you may not want to defer. Or frankly, if you need the money, maybe you had planned to work till 66 and you're one of the many older workers that loses a job at 62, if you need the money, take it. But if you're in a position that you can afford to defer, either because you plan to keep working, your spouse plans to keep working, or you have other sources of income, delaying Social Security for someone who is healthy and who can afford it can be a great strategy.
Well, maybe I'll be a little bit more specific, because I agree with you completely. And here's the analysis that I ran. Let's assume, for discussion's sake, you start taking Social Security at 62%. At age 62, and to compare apples to apples, I'm going to have you invest that money that you take in Social Security, and I'm going to assume that the investment earns 6%. And then I'm going to compare that to somebody who waits until 70. So obviously the person who took the money at 62 is getting a big head start on their savings, where the person who waits till 70 basically has to wait till 70 to get anything. But then because they are getting so much more per month, then the like you said, there is a break-even point. And using a bunch of assumptions that I'm not going to go through now, other than a 6% reinvestment rate, is I have the break-even number at about age 84.
In most cases, that's going to work out, but I'm going to pick a few holes in your theory right there. In the old days, pre-2008, that was a legitimate strategy. Take your money early and invest it because you know you're going to do better than Social Security. But now let's fast forward to 2013, where on your safe money, your risk-free money that you're getting in a bank account or a CD or a treasury, you're making less than 1%. And Social Security is saying if you postpone after age 66 up until age 70, you are guaranteed 8%. I think that's a slam dunk myself.
Well, so do I. In fact, I point this out not to say that my analysis is accurate, because I want to poke some more holes in my analysis. The other problem, and we'll get to the marital issue later, but the other problem, and I'm going to quote somebody that I suspect that we both know, is Larry Kotlikoff.
Certainly.
And it was right on this show, and he said, well, even if you use that 84 as a break even, let's take two possibilities. Number one, you do die earlier. Well, in that case, you're dead. You don't have any more financial problems. That's it. What you should be worried about is becoming old and not having sufficient income to live comfortably. So even if you're thinking, well, I might make it to age 80 or age 82, he would say, don't, and these were his exact words, don't think like an actuary, think like an economist. Protect your older age, protect your income in the event that you do live a long time. And that made some sense to me.
Oh, I think it makes a lot of sense. And also, going back to the comparison of buying a private annuity product from an insurance company versus delaying your Social Security, the best deal you're going to get from an insurance company assumes that when you die, so does your income stream. The value of Social Security, if you are married, or even in some cases if you're divorced or you have minor children, there you die, there's going to be survivor benefits. And that is a value that is often overlooked, and one of the things I love to talk about as we get into some of my strategies in a little bit. For married couples, they shouldn't look at how much do I get versus how much do you get. They should be looking at how do I maximize the survivor benefit for who's ever left behind.
Well, I could not agree with you more, and it's great to hear this. Jane Bryan Quinn actually says that this is, to some extent, a woman's issue, because she assumes that, at least actuarially, the man is likely to die first, and if he takes Social Security early at age 62, and then he dies somewhere along the way before his wife, that he is basically forever dooming his wife to a lower income stream for the rest of her life.
I couldn't agree more, because the way Social Security works is you get a benefit as a worker, you get a retirement benefit, and in some cases you have dual income couples where they both have their own retirement benefit. One of the great values of Social Security is for that non-working spouse, just for the fact that he or she is married, is entitled to a spousal benefit worth up to half of what the worker gets. But if that worker dies, the survivor is entitled to 100% of what that deceased worker was either receiving or entitled to if the surviving spouse collected at full retirement age, little less if they collected early. So this is what I really try to stress. This is the value for a married couple, or in cases of divorced spouses when they were married for at least 10 years, people don't realize that divorced spouses have many of the same benefits as married couples.
Well, we'll get to divorce in a minute. I'll just say that when I was giving a workshop on Social Security and I explained about the divorce benefits, a woman said, the no good SOB is finally good for something, because she was able to collect on
his. I actually just wrote a column today, as I just explained, a spousal benefit can be worth up to half of the worker's benefit, whereas a survivor benefit can be worth up to 100%. And one advisor said back to me, well, I guess that means an ex-spouse is worth more dead than alive. No comment.
Well, what you really said that I think is so important, and I want to repeat it again to make sure that listeners get the concept. If you have an increased Social Security benefit, and let's just say the husband and wife, and let's use the old traditional where the husband has the higher earnings record, and the husband dies, the surviving spouse is entitled to 100% of what he would have received, and by delaying from age 62 to 66 or preferably even 70, the surviving spouse is then going to get a higher income for the rest of their life. So that is a great way to provide for your spouse without having to, in effect, buy insurance.
Right. I usually recommend to married couples, and of course everyone's situation is individual, but as a general rule of thumb, the higher earner, whether it's man or woman, because it's gender neutral, the higher earner should try to delay as long as possible, because you are locking in not only the largest retirement benefit, but also the largest potential survivor benefit.
Well, it's a good place to take a quick break, and when we return, Jim and Mary Beth will continue the conversation. Listeners, remember, you can call in with questions and comments at 412-333-9385.
The Lang Money Hour, where Smart Money talks, featuring the expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang. More coming up right here on KQV. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV, AM 10. For all your financial needs, turn to the Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. For more information, visit online at paytaxeslater.com. Let's talk more smart money.
And welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. I'm David Baer, here with Mary Beth Franklin and Jim Lang.
So during the first segment, Mary Beth made a pretty convincing case for holding off on Social Security and recommending that particularly the person with the higher earnings record hold off, preferably till age 70. But I know Mary Beth has some pretty interesting Social Security strategies up her sleeve, so I thought maybe we could start this segment by talking about something that you have written about extensively called apply and suspend.
Right. As a little background, I like to tell consumers and financial advisors that I consider 66 the magic age for three reasons. One, as we discussed, you would get your full benefits if you waited until 66 to claim. Two, what a lot of people don't realize is if they claim Social Security benefits early, before their full retirement age, and continue to work, they are going to be subject to earnings cap restrictions. For 2013, that's a mere $15,120 a year. That means earn more than that while you are collecting Social Security benefits before your full retirement age, and you start giving benefits back. In my opinion, if you're younger than full retirement age and plan to keep working, it just doesn't make sense to collect early. But the third most important part of why Social Security is the magic age, not only does the earnings cap disappear at that point, but you can engage in what I call creative claiming strategies that you can only do if you wait until 66 to claim.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about those strategies?
Well, there's basically two different strategies, and then I'll go through the profiles of the married couples and how they would apply. One is called file and suspend. What that means is for a worker who waits until full retirement age of 66 can say to Social Security, I want to file and suspend. That means I'm filing for the purpose of triggering spousal benefits from my wife or husband, but I am suspending my own benefits so they grow to the maximum amount. I'll collect them later up until age 70. The second strategy is called filing a restricted claim for spousal benefits only. What that means is at 66 or older, I can say to Social Security, now that I am full retirement age, I want to file a restricted claim for spousal benefits only. That means give me half of what my spouse is getting, but don't give my own benefits. Let those keep growing up until age 70. So let me give you some examples of who this would apply to and what it would mean in terms of money. Does that work?
Yeah, it sure does. And boy, if I'm a listener and I don't know this stuff, I'm taking notes frantically and want to hear this information again, because what you're telling people can really save tens of thousands of dollars. And then when we get into the Roth IRA conversion discussion, if we combine the techniques, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. But please go ahead.
For example, I divide married couples into three profiles. Ozzy and Harriet, a traditional couple where one spouse, usually the wife, but again, it's gender neutral, has little or no earnings on her own. So her biggest Social Security benefit is going to be as a spouse. Then I consider some couples who are dual income couples. They both have earnings history. They're both entitled to benefits on their own records, but one is probably the bigger earner. And then a third profile of what I call the power couples, people where both spouses have significant earnings history over their lifetime and probably are both entitled to major benefits. So let me take you step by step how these strategies work. And it also assumes that the spouses are close in age. We can talk after this of what happens when spouses' ages are widely different. But let's assume you have spouses who are, let's say the husband is 66 years old, he's full retirement age, and he's heard our discussion, so he plans to keep working and delaying his Social Security benefit. But his wife, who really doesn't have much earnings history, would really like to have some Social Security benefits. At 66, he could say to Social Security, I want to file and suspend. Let's say the husband is entitled to $2,000 a month Social Security benefit. A spousal benefit is worth up to $1,000 a month. When he files and suspends, he gets nothing at the moment. She gets $1,000 a month. And later, when he turns 70, he collects his bigger benefit. Remember, we talked about delayed retirement credits worth 8% a year. So at age 70, 4 years after his normal retirement age, rather than collecting $2,000 a month, he's going to collect $640 a month. I'm doing this all in my head. That means he's got this bigger benefit now. Each annual cost of living adjustment is going to be a bigger benefit applied to that, the cost of living adjustment. And more importantly, if he dies first, which actually happens to most men, the wife is going to step up to 100% of what he received during his lifetime, 100% including those delayed retirement benefits.
And she's getting $1,000 a month.
Exactly. Up until, let's say, now that assumes she gets $1,000 a month if she collected at her full retirement age of 66. But she can get benefits as early as 62. They'd be worth less in $7 a month. She might get $700 a month. But still, it's income coming into their household for all those years, and then he collects a bigger benefit later. It's a great strategy for what I consider a traditional couple.
Yeah, and well, I'll put some numbers to that after we talk about the Roth IRA conversions. And you know something, as much as I'd like to talk more about Social Security, I did promise in the description of this show that we would at least talk on about Roth IRA conversion some, because I know that that is also one of your strong areas that you have been writing about and making calculations for years and years.
So you lead. You're the dance.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. So let's just talk about. I think by now our listeners hopefully understand the general concept of a Roth IRA conversion, which is basically that you are paying taxes before you have to on a chunk of IRA or 401k or 403b money, and in return that money grows income tax free for the rest of your life, the rest of your spouse's life, and the rest of your children and grandchildren's lives. So it just makes sense that if you're going to pay tax on money that you have not yet paid tax on, like an IRA, and that the income that you are that you have to recognize from doing a Roth IRA conversion is going to be on top of your existing income, then it's going to make sense to do a Roth IRA conversion when you are in a low tax bracket. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
All right. So when is, let's forget about the issue of Social Security for a minute. Typically, the best time to do a Roth IRA conversion, if you're going to do a certain amount over a limited number of years, is typically after you retire, so you don't have your income from your job or your wages or your self-employment, but before age 70 and a half, so you don't have your income from your minimum required distribution and your Social Security.
That's right, to do it while your income is lower and before you're subject to the required distributions. Now, two caveats I would add to that. And for some people, a Roth IRA conversion, particularly those who have legacy issues that want to pass tax-free money onto their children and grandchildren, it's a great idea, assuming they've got the money to pay the taxes. But there's two caveats I would note. One is, in the year you make the conversion, or if you spread it over several years, in the years you make the conversion, that money that you convert from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA looks like, for tax purposes, like regular income. And certainly you have to pay income tax on that converted amount. But it does two other things. It also boosts the amount of money you'd have to pay taxes on your Social Security benefits in that year. And more importantly, these days, higher income retirees are paying higher premium for Medicare. So that's another thing to keep in mind, that if you are doing a Roth IRA conversion during your retirement year, you may at least temporarily be paying higher taxes on your Social Security benefits and also higher Medicare premium.
All right. Well, I'm going to get to that issue, because that brings in a couple pretty interesting strategies. But to quantify this, by the way, I've run some numbers, not even assuming that you make the ideal timing of Social Security, but what I have concluded, and again, I actually do 2 and 6 and even 8 hour workshops just on Roth IRA conversions. But the conclusion that I came to, in today's dollars, not measured in total dollars, but in today's dollars, if you make a Roth IRA conversion of $100,000, $100,000, that 20 years from now, you're better off by $28,000 if you then do the conversion and die, compared to somebody who didn't do the conversion, and I'm taking into account the money that you paid or you gave up in income taxes, you're still better off by $160,000. And if a grandchild ultimately inherits that money, that grandchild is better off by $838,000.
Oh, it's an incredible gift to future generations, because what people don't realize is, yes, you're paying income taxes up front on the amount you're converting, but all that money going forward grows tax-free.
Which is tremendous. All right, so now, and again, you know, I love to talk about Roths, and we could talk about them for a long time, but what I really would like to get to before we close out tonight's show is, you said that if you do a Roth IRA conversion, that's going to increase your income, which might ultimately increase the taxation of your Social Security or Medicare Part B. So let's just concentrate for a minute on, if you do a Roth IRA conversion and you're in a low tax bracket and you are adding the percentage of how much money you have to pay tax on for your Social Security, so while you think you might be doing a conversion at the top of the just at 15%, that when you take into account the additional tax on your Social Security, you might be at 30 or even 40%, in which case the Roth IRA conversion may not make sense if you're increasing the tax on your Social Security.
But as you have pointed out, it's not an all-or-nothing deal. You can do this over several years to stay within, you know, a tax bracket or two without making it too onerous.
All right. I'll tell you what I am getting to. Before, and let's forget about apply and suspend for a moment. Let's just talk about the straightforward situation where, without a spouse, you gave a pretty convincing case to hold off on Social Security until you are 70. What if we combine the ideas of doing a Roth IRA conversion, and we want to do it at a low income tax rate, and we don't want to increase the tax on our Social Security? So what we can consider is doing a Roth IRA conversion and combining that technique with holding off on Social Security.
That makes sense, because your Social Security would have been added income that could be potentially taxed, and if you're deferring your Social Security, that's less income that's coming in.
And to me, that introduction, and we'll probably get into a few details after the break, but that introduction of the synergy between holding off on Social Security or perhaps doing apply and suspend like you had mentioned, and doing a series of Roth IRA conversions can make people a lot of money.
Well, let's take that break now, and when we return, Jim and Mary Beth will continue the conversation.
The Lang Money Hour, where Smart Money Talks, featuring the expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang. More coming up right here on KQV. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all your financial needs, turn to the Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. For more information, visit online at paytaxeslater.com. Let's talk more smart money.
And welcome back to the final segment of today's Lang Money Hour with Jim Lang and Mary Beth Franklin.
And Mary Beth actually said that she lived in Philadelphia for a while, and I don't want to leave the Philadelphians out, and actually people throughout, attorneys all throughout Pennsylvania. That workshop that we're presenting on November 14th, and we're doing that live in Pittsburgh, but in November 12th, I'm doing the same workshop in Mechanicsburg, and that is being simul-videoed, so you could actually see that. I think there's about 8 or 10 locations in Philadelphia and certainly all the probably bigger cities in Pennsylvania. So, and I know that we have a somewhat of a statewide and even national audience. So for attorneys who are all throughout Pennsylvania, you would be able to have access to that. And for whatever it's worth, I've put more work into that. I think that's going to be a really valuable workshop for attorneys. But anyway, before the break, we were talking about, on the first segment, we were talking about the value of waiting longer to collect your Social Security and the fact that you would be getting 132% if you wait till age 70 than your full retirement Social Security if you take it at 66, and that you would only get 75% if you took it at 62. Then Mary Beth talked about some of the advantages of a technique called apply and suspend and how important this is for surviving spouses and the family as a whole. Then we talked a little bit about Roth IRA conversions. And now what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Mary Beth, is talk about the synergy of holding off on Social Security and doing a series of Roth IRA conversions while you are waiting to get your highest Social Security benefit.
And I think that makes a whole lot of sense, because on one hand, you are converting to a Roth IRA when you're in a lower income tax bracket, partially because you're deferring to collect Social Security later. And then the byproduct of that is you end up with a much bigger Social Security benefit.
Right. So you're getting a bigger Social Security benefit. Now, again, I'm a little bit of a numbers runner. Well, to be fair, a lot of a numbers runner. And also, to be fair, was actually not done by me, but by Steve Komen. But what we did is we compared two people, one who took Social Security at 62 and still did a series of Roth IRA conversions up to the top of the 15% bracket. And then we compared that person to somebody who waited until age 70, did the apply and suspend, and the difference when they were even just at age 86, the difference in today's dollars, not future dollars, in future dollars it would be much higher, was $219,000. So, and all you need is for one person to live that long. You don't need both spouses. So think about this. By doing a series of Roth IRA conversions and holding off on Social Security, that you're better off by $219,000, which is really significant. And I think one of the nice things that I've always liked about your work is you haven't tried to, you know, do tricky investments where somebody can take a risky investment and get more money. But your strategies have typically just been more money no matter how you're investing the money.
Right. And let me add one other thought of the value of Roth conversion that people really haven't thought about up till now, particularly for listeners who might be in a higher income bracket. They may be aware that Medicare benefits are now means tested. People in higher income brackets pay a higher monthly premium for Medicare Part B. That covers your doctor's visits and outpatient services. Most people are paying about $105 a month. Higher income people could be paying over $300 a month per spouse, per month, just for Medicare Part B. Plus, they're paying for a Medigap private insurance policy. Plus, they're paying for a Medicare prescription Part D policy. It really adds up. And when Social Security and Medicare are looking at what counts as income for the purposes of figuring how much of a premium you're going to pay, there are now only three sources of tax-free income in retirement for those purposes. One is distribution from a Roth IRA. Two is distributions from a health savings account that you've built up during your working career. And three is cash value life insurance distributions that you might take as a loan or a withdrawal. So I think for higher income people, they may really want to look at Roth IRA conversions as a way of keeping their health care costs in retirement down by reducing the amount of premiums they're paying.
Well, that is another benefit that I didn't even quantify. And what I was going to say is if the husband and wife are $219,000 better off, and then they eventually die and leave money to their children, that their children are better off, even in today's dollars, of by more than $500,000 because the tax-free features of the Roth IRA conversion will, unless they change the law, and that's
a
whole other...
Yeah,
that's a whole other topic. Actually, Ed Slott and I are going to cover that topic in depth on November 20th, the potential death of the stretch IRA, which I'm afraid we're not going to have time to talk about tonight.
Yes, but it also shows that's why you want to do it now.
Well, I think that that's a good point. And the other thing that a lot of times people don't recognize for the value of the Roth IRA conversion is it will also reduce, most likely PA inheritance tax, because most people are not paying federal estate tax anymore.
You're right. Pennsylvania is one of those few states with its very own inheritance tax, and it can bite. It's a great state to retire in and not a great one to die in.
Well, I think that's right. And interestingly enough, so if you work in Pennsylvania, you don't have to pay income tax, or looked at another way, you get a tax deduction when you put money in your retirement plan, your 401k, your 403b, etc. But then when you retire and you receive those monies, they're not taxable. And that's the same with the city of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few states that does not tax IRA distributions. It's pretty significant. And you can see, many people don't realize that second only to Florida, Pennsylvania has more people 65 plus. And the reason is people tend to move to Florida to retire, but people in Pennsylvania tend to stay there.
Well, I think that's a good point. And I better watch our Pittsburgh-Philadelphia rivalry, but Pittsburghers have a history of digging in and staying for good. But Pennsylvania is a very good state to retire, and what you don't want to do, which is what one of my clients did, is they spent their whole career in Pennsylvania, and they had to pay Pennsylvania income tax on all the money that they put into their retirement plan because they didn't get a break. And had they stayed in Pennsylvania, they would have enjoyed tax-free not only a return of their money but also the growth on it. But then they went and moved to California, which taxes IRAs, so they got it coming and going.
And I believe
California
is one of the few states that also taxes Social Security benefits. It's a high ouch income tax state.
it's a beautiful state, and I love going there to visit, but probably not a great place to retire.
One other point on Roth IRAs, and I know it's really difficult for people to cough up the money to pay the taxes before they really have to. So if that sticks in your craw, the one thing you can do is encourage your kids and grandkids who have any kind of working income to start saving early in a Roth IRA, because that gives them decades of tax-free growth. And as I often write to young people, and I've got two sons in their 20s myself, I say, if you don't plan for retirement, retirement's going to look a lot like college. You're going to be eating a lot of ramen noodles, but you won't be as cute. And when they ID you, it's going to be for your Walgreens senior discount.
So let me ask you this. So here you are, one of the top financial writers in the country, and I assume for discussion's sake that your children are at least reasonably intelligent. Do they listen to you, or do they go their own way anyway?
Oh, they don't listen to me at all. That's why I write for other people's kids.
Well, maybe what you should do is, I actually have a client, and he gave me permission to tell this story. His name is Walt Dollard. He's a very, very smart man, a retired engineer. Actually, he kind of ran a good chunk of the nuclear division at Westinghouse. And what he said, so he wanted his kids to have all the up-to-date, best strategies regarding IRAs and retirement plans and Roth IRAs, etc. So he gave each one of his kids my book and said, here's the deal. If you want to inherit any of my money, you have to read this book.
What a great plan. Send me two copies.
Now, I don't know if you play hardball with your kids like that, but he did, and I think maybe that might be something that you should consider for your kids.
Sold.
And maybe it'd be easier to have them read somebody else's book rather than yours, although frankly, your information has always been stellar, and to me, one of the things that would be really interesting to me is to, and I don't know if there's a copyright problem with this or not, but to get some of the top articles and top insights that you have written throughout the years for Kiplinger's Investment News and others, and have some kind of compilation.
Well, once I finish taking my CFP exam next week, I will be working on a Social Security claiming strategies book. So I've told advisors and consumers to stay tuned.
Well, you know, at the risk of duplicating a program, after that comes out, that might be a very, very interesting
follow-up
discussion. You know something? I am getting... all right. So we have... Well, let me ask you this. So we've talked about Social Security. We've talked about Roth IRA conversions. And we talked a little bit about the synergy of combining the idea of holding off on Social Security and doing a series of Roth IRA conversions when you are close to 70. And we're wrapping up, but one of the things I sometimes like to do is to just kind of throw out a general question where you have maybe 2 minutes to say, what haven't we talked about that you think is important for our listeners to know?
I think for people who are married and divorced, if they were married for at least 10 years, many of them do not realize they are entitled to the same Social Security benefits on the ex-spouse as if they were still married. When I go around the country talking to consumer groups and financial advisors, I see the shock and awe in the audience about, you mean I can collect on my ex? It's either, you know, glee or revenge, depending how you look at it. But
and that doesn't take away from the if there's another spouse.
It does not affect. Let's say you are married for 10 years, you are now divorced, your ex-husband has remarried. You, as the ex-wife who is unmarried, can collect on your former spouse's benefit, even if he is currently married, and it does not take away from that current spouse.
Wonderful.
The two things I would say is, yes, you can collect benefits as early as 62, but the smartest strategy is wait until age 66, file a restricted claim for spousal benefits only, which says, give me half of what he's getting, and wait until 70 to collect your own enhanced benefit.
Well, I think that is some great advice, and there, I know that you have other Social Security strategies that we didn't get to, but Mary Beth, I want to thank you. You have been terrific. For people who are interested in reading more about Mary Beth's strategies, I would strongly encourage people to go to www.investmentnews.com. Again, that's www.investmentnews.com. That has a lot of Mary Beth, and then Mary Beth made a unprecedented offer to actually answer individual emails, not promising to get to all of them, and people can ask her a question at, what was your email again?
It's M.B. Franklin, like Mary Beth Franklin, M.B. Franklin at investmentnews.com.
Well, thank you again for being on the show. You've been a terrific guest.
Great to talk to you, Jim, and I want two copies of that book.
All right. They'll be in the mail tomorrow.
Well, and I want to say thanks to listeners for tuning into this edition of the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. And thanks also to the Lang Financial Group program coordinator Amanda Cassidy-Swinesburg, and Dan Weinberg, our in-studio producer.